Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. We prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnson, with today's guest.
Hi, I'm Roy Jones. I'm glad to be here today visiting the old campus at Houston Baptist University. Just a little bit about myself. I'm a native Houstonian, which I know is kind of a rare breed these days. I actually grew up about 20 minutes from the campus. I am currently working as a financial services industry consultant with Alvarez & Marsal, a global consulting provider in the area of financial services industry consultation. I'm wonderfully married, have three adult children, and two blossoming and flourishing grandchildren. I'm a former basketball player here at Houston Baptist University. Kind of background of my story, again, a native Houstonian, but decided to go about 800 miles away to college my first 2 years to pursue my degree. As an athlete, I transferred into Houston Baptist. Kind of an interesting story. I had a home and away series with the Huskies, and I played so well, they decided to kind of bribe me or steal me away from my former university. So it was tremendous for me because I got to come home and play in front of familiar friends and family settings. My one mantra as a 20-year-old when I transferred in was that I was a wonderful athlete student. But soon after arriving on campus, and I have to admit, I really didn't pay attention to the word Baptist embedded in the middle of the university's name. But I soon began to grow into what is commonly referred to as a student athlete. The campus back then held tremendous responsibility in ensuring that young folks like myself flourished in a Christian environment. The word academic excellence is kind of thrown around quite a bit in today's society, but I cannot overstate just the tremendous relationships that I formed here, not only with athletic teammates and coaches and staff, but with the administration, with teachers. Everyone just kind of took me under their wing and allowed me to flourish. And in the Christian environment, I was committing myself to the Lord at an early age. And there's an interesting intersection when you're a young adult and college, even if you've had a Christian upbringing. And so I was at that interesting juncture, but you know, again, matriculating into Houston Baptist as a 20-year-old transferee, as an athlete, was probably just the most tremendous thing and one of the touch points of my life that I carry with me forever. I've been able to flourish. Actually, one anecdote, my coach at the time, a couple of years after I graduated, I actually came in, the economy wasn't doing too well in the early 80s, and I actually came in and kind of kicked around the idea of coming into coaching. He thankfully talked me out of that, and so I didn't get any of the gray hair from trying to walk the floors of basketball and coaching at any level. But I've had a tremendous experience as an adult. I've been in banking for, I guess, 30 plus years. I now again serve as a consultant. I've just been, you know, blessed to have lifelong relationships. But again, the Christian foundation and just the catapulting into the business world that I received here at Houston Baptist, it's endearing to me, and it can never be overstated.
Roy, it's just a remarkable story you have, and we welcome you today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, you, a lot of things we can talk about, because mm-hmm. we're both fathers, and we're both grandfathers. It's hard to believe that, isn't it?
I know.
I mean, where in the world did time go?
It has a way of just sneaking up on you.
You know, they asked Billy Graham, what have you learned most in life? He said, the brevity of life.
Exactly.
I get that. You know, talk to us for a minute. I mean, the banking industry. So, wow, a lot of things going on and pandemic, post-pandemic, Fed wakes up. We got rate increases coming. How is the financial community?
Well, I think the biggest transition in today's society is the digital transformation. I was talking to my wife the other day, and we were just actually trying to remember the last time we actually had to go into a bank.
Yeah.
You know, and my wife is also a lifelong banker, and she's been in the industry. And so we've both seen all the changes that have come about. When I first started, you know, I didn't even have direct deposit. You know, I was getting the old U.S. Treasury check with the eagle printed on it. That's how I knew which envelope to cast aside and which one to keep and take right to the bank right away. But, you know, now we recently refinanced our house, and I never met anyone. You know, it was done all in the digital confines. And so I think that's the biggest change is just the transformation to things are just happening quickly. You know, you wake up in the morning and something transpires in China and it affects you in Houston, Texas, you know, in nanoseconds. So I think that's the biggest transformation that I've seen in my career.
And so help us understand in the particular consulting you do, mm-hmm. what exactly do you do? I mean, what are the frequent areas?
So my background, I started out when I left Houston Baptist as a regulator. I actually worked for the Treasury Department. Mm-hmm. And so I was responsible for actually administration of all national banks across the land. And so as a bank examiner, you learn different aspects from capital to liquidity to the management of the institution to the asset quality. And so I did that for 9 years, left there and actually went to work for Chase Bank here in Houston. Left that and formed my own consultancy and hadn't had enough of private interest, so I went back into government and worked for the FDIC for a number of years at the last downturn. So basically my background is in risk and mm-hmm. compliance, making sure that clients, you know, if they do kind of run afoul of the regulatory requirements, that we can coach them. I had an old mentor who used to say we basically, you know, helped them back out of the ditch.
Yeah.
And so I basically everything from anti-money laundering to processes around risk management to making sure that, you know, my clients are fulfilling their regulatory requirement responsibilities.
So what year, how many years have you been doing it?
Since 1984. I mean, my brain moves back to that, both in the private and public sector, again, starting as a regulator. As a bank examiner, and so it's been probably coming up, about, I had a short respite there, but it's probably coming up on about 37, 38 years.
Wow, did you ever think when you were throwing the hoops and running down the court in tennis shoes, you're gonna be doing this?
No, I did not. And actually, you know, as a teenager in the 70s, I thought, man, if I could just go into banking, and I knew nothing about banking at the time, but I just thought, you know, the person who controls the money probably has a pretty decent, you know, setting in life. And so I was always interested in banking. And so my, you know, goal, even as a young adult or teenager, really, before I even set for the SAT, I want to be in banking. And I thought if I could, you know, have a wonderful wife, two or three kids, a dog, a house, a mortgage, a couple of cars, and make $40,000 a year, I'd be set for life.
Yeah.
Well, you know, $40,000 doesn't go as far now as it did in $80. But it's been interesting to see just the transition. You know, when I came out of school, President Carter was in office, and, you know, the prime interest rate, which is basically the rate that, you know, institutions charge for the cost of their money, was at 17 or 18%.
Right.
I was coming over here this morning, and I understand that the Fed will probably leave the interest rate at zero. So that just goes to show you, but even then, you know, what I paid for a hamburger in 1980, you know, would cost me pretty, a couple of hours worth of work in 2022 costs. So it's interesting to see just the transition of, you know, the whole paradigm that is financial services industry.
I can imagine. And Roy, I mean, you also have seen the transformation of Houston Baptist College. Mm-hmm. To Houston Baptist University today. Tell us what the differences are and what's impressed you the most watching HBN.
I share a story that I committed to a writing recently. When we came back, let me move back further. Being a Houstonian in the 60s and 70s, it was just this burgeoning metropolis that was really had such a small town feel. I mean, I could leave 5 minutes from my house and see cows and pastures. That's just the, Houston was oil and cattle back then. And so at the time, Sharpstown Mall was just kind of getting off the ground, and that was basically the furthest I ever went, to the gallery and Sharpstown Mall. And so I had no idea that Houston Baptist existed. When we came, I mentioned we played a home and away series my sophomore year when I was going to school in Colorado, and we came here and flew in, stayed at the hotel, the old Hilton down the street at the time, down Highway 59. And so we get in cabs to come to the campus, and I distinctly remember the cab driver saying, does anyone know actually where the school is? And we were coming on 59 before you turn on the plunger, and one of my teammates said, yeah, this guy's from Houston. And I said, I have no idea where the university is. You know, I've never seen it, had rarely heard of it. So you go from that and move it even further when it was Houston Baptist College, even to the germination of the idea of putting a college with a Christian perspective in Old Rice Fields. And believe me, I know there were Old Rice Fields because I'm a bit of a historian, but I also know when I walked from the apartment over on Beechnut down campus, if there was any moderate rain, it was flat and it was flooded, and you had to make sure that you had at least, above the ankle shoes to make it over here if you're going to be in dry when you arrive. So you go from that to, athletically, the things that they've done. We won our championship first couple years of the old Trans-American Athletic Conference. We had guys make, All-American. We had a wonderful gymnastics program. We had, we added track, and then we added, even to the most recent, adding of football, baseball. And then we had, at the time, a couple of golfers that were pretty good at the time. And so it's been tremendous from an athletic perspective, but even more so from, the structures, the physical structures I see. I was coming in and the old Atwood building, the Atwood One, was the end of the campus when I was here.
Wow.
And so, to see the attention now to student housing with the additional housing that's been augmented, to see the different colleges and universities, but even, to see the online offering of colleges now, to see the curriculum offerings. So it's gone from that microcosm of a really family-oriented institution, still retaining that Christian worldview and that family feel, but now there are things that can draw an international student body. I've had next generation family members that attend now, pursuing master's degrees, pursuing undergrad degrees. And so HBU has everything that a 18-year-old kid who doesn't exactly know what they want to do in life, but wants to have a Christian environment, a caring environment, a nurturing environment, and yet everything that you can get at a institution of a much larger size.
You have such a history in Houston. Can you speak for a minute on the dynamic of the growth of this city? Because Dr. Sloan often says it's not always the case that a Christian university is in one of the largest cities in America. HBU is. Talk about Houston and what you've seen.
I tease folks, I said, my dad, we lived kind of in the central part of Houston, and we always knew he was getting either raises or going up in the management of his companies, because we continued to move away from the central metropolis that was Houston. And so it was basically suburbanization, phrase, in the 60s and 70s. So the further you got out, and Sharpstown and Bel Air, when I was coming up, were at the fringe of Houston. Mm-hmm. They really were.
Yep.
Westheimer went all the way out and was basically a farm to market, as was Fondren and some of the other streets. So Really, that was, our dynamic was probably within a 5-mile radius. Well, now, you know, you can almost go to Austin and still have feelings of Houston. You can go all the way to Galveston. Basically, we've consumed Galveston. You can go north of Conroe, and you can go as far south as, you know, Brazoria County now and beyond, almost to Freeport, and that still has a Houston impact. So I think that's been the most tremendous thing for me is, and it's not always been good things or good impact. You know, as with anything, that any population center that grows, you're going to get the, you know, kind of the ill effects of that population boom. You know, we were, as I think back when I first learned to drive, and I was so cautious coming down Highway 59, which, you know, basically the inner loop, the 610, was the boundary of traffic. And then something crazy occurred in the early 80s while I was here at Houston Baptist. We started seeing all these out-of-state license plates from New Jersey and New York and Philadelphia. Well, it was the energy boom. And, you know, we were going away from the Rust Belt and the steel industries of the Midwest and the Northeast. And we were just getting inundated and flooded with population. Well, people are going to go and, you know, where the money is. And rooftops are going to be built where the money is. And so you get all of these dynamics. And I really, you know, I've kind of been on the edge of the political environment most of my life. I've worked when I was with Chase Bank with a lot of different councilmen and the mayor's office and state and local individuals from a community reinvestment perspective. And so I've kind of seen, you know, the political side of Houston change. But again, for a university, a Christian university, to be able to kind of be a hedge against that and to flourish, you know, along with the society that it's situated in, I think speaks volume. Again, not only for the fact that leadership comes and goes, you know, I guess now I'm on my third president, or maybe fourth, I have to think about it, and it's, you know, I'm not wishing any ill thoughts against Dr. Sloan. We want him around as long as we can have him.
No, you're just getting older.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. The years are piling up. But I've seen the tremendous growth. I've seen the tremendous impact, again, even in generations within my family who I would have never thought would have attended Houston Baptist University. But it's just been tremendous. And the transformation, not only of the local city, but also Houston Baptist as an institution.
Lawrence Wright is a Pulitzer writer out of Austin, mm-hmm. and he wrote this book called God Save Texas. And it's it's primarily focused on Houston. And mm-hmm. Lawrence writes for The New Yorker. He's a phenomenal writer. But this book, you just laugh your head off. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. I mean, it tells all the incredible stories mm-hmm. of Houston. No zoning laws.
Oh, and, no. Oh, no. This is when we had that pioneer instinct. We have that, you know, that rough and rowdy Texas mentality, of course. I have a good friend who actually has on his wall, you know, currency of old Texas money.
Yeah.
You know, and there's the secession and all that. Well, I always tell a story about Houston. It was, you know, again, especially as an African-American coming up in the 60s, I never felt a scintilla of racism. And as I got to be an adult, I kind of learned more of the political perspective. And the actual building that I worked in, the old Gulf building, which was initially the part of the Texas Commerce Bank and Chase Bank. And again, I apologize because I told you I was kind of a part-time historian. And so Jesse Chase Jones actually was instrumental part of the Treasury Department back in the, I guess it had to be the 20s and the 30s. And as a part of that, when it came time to really, nurture the tremendous growth economically of Houston, which was kind of this backwater at the time, but the good things are it was wonderfully situated because we got a port, so shipping, of course,
sure.
back then. We had oil from all the dinosaurs that had, you know, perished before us and left us oil. And so you're right there at the nexus of a wonderful opportunity for growth. Plus, we're kind of centrally located, and, you know, and of course now this doesn't matter anymore because you can be anywhere in the world in an hour or two. But the leaders in the 40s and 50s all got together, you know, of all, you know, denominations, Jewish, you know, Christian, African-American, white, the wealthy and maybe the not so wealthy. And they said, you know what, this pie is big enough for all of us. You know, if we discriminate, we hurt ourselves.
Yes.
And so the leaders decided, and they came together, including, you know, religious leaders, and they came together and said, you know, let's just segment this pie. There's enough economically for us, because if we don't, you know, share the wealth, none of us will benefit. Now, of course, their mindset, to some extent, was based on the economic driver, but there were religious leaders at the table that actually said, you know, we have to do better than this. So those ills that happened in, say, in Boston or in New York or other places, Houston was never really impacted like that. That's not to say, you know, the civil rights era kind of passed us by altogether, but we just didn't have those issues because of people of import who understood that there has to be a sharing of things. And if no other dynamic goes to the Christian dynamic, then, you know, it's got to be sharing.
I totally agree. And, you know, Roy, it's interesting. I've not been in Houston my whole life, but the 7 years I have, I've said to people all over the country, it's one of the most beautiful cities with the people, yeah. You know? I mean, I've never seen such an integration of people of every ethnicity. And I almost kind of think back, I wish when I was a young man, because I kind of grew up in a very affluent, a predominantly Caucasian community, a suburb of Kansas City.
Okay.
But what was cool, all the Caucasian kids loved all the rap music. You know, they didn't like, they you know. So there wasn't racial discrimination, but I don't think I really knew how the world was as a kid. Now, I do now, and during Hurricane Harvey, when people are talking about Charlottesville, I'm saying, y'all ought to come down here to Houston and see how people are helping each other in Hurricane Harvey. They don't care if you're red or white, African-American. Mm-hmm. I mean, what your ethnicity is, the community embraces each other.
Well, what you're sharing with me is you're not from Texas, but you got here as soon as you could. So the old saying. And yes, I mean, I've enjoyed that. I've been, you know, I benefit from that dynamic. Again, and from early childhood in Houston and just being a Houstonian. Now, you know, was I invited to country club events or to cotillions or things of that sort? No, but Houston was bracketed in such, you know, I did not want anything in an African-American, middle American, middle income environment. You know, I had a wonderful childhood. And then when I went off to school, I was exposed to so many things, you know, that maybe others would not have been exposed to. One driver, even in a young age in my high school years, big monstrosities like, you know, Maxwell House Coffee, which where my dad worked, with Brown and Root, Camden Steel, these energy related and service related companies were huge. And so if the avenue of going to college in 1977 didn't interest you, you could immediately go to one of these, you know, plants and make good money and, you know, get a mortgage, buy a house. I mean, I was so jealous. Kids were 17, 18 years old and were driving the nicest cars on my campus in high school because their dads might have worked somewhere or their uncle worked somewhere, and they were immediately taken in. But I decided, you know, especially as an athlete, I decided I wanted to kind of go a different route, and nothing against those. A lot of those guys probably are running those companies now. But as an athlete student, I went off to school, and I mean, the world just got exposed. I actually went to Denver University in Colorado, so it was a wholly different environment than I'd come through here in Houston. Not as progressive, but when I came back to Houston Baptist, again, I was back into that conservative Baptist environment. And while I might have fought it as a kid, I always tease people and tell them, you know, especially my wife, my first job as 11 years old was actually a caretaker at our church. And so I would, you know, I was the guy who rolled out the rice paper for the weddings. I was the guy who cleaned up, who actually got to light the candles at the altar. I did a lot of that. And so we were firmly entrenched, and then my mother was actually church secretary. And so she reported directly to the pastor of the church. It was three blocks from my house. You had no excuse. You couldn't say, you know, it's too far away. I walked to church from the age of 11, you know, probably younger than that. The summer programs were there. So it was basically a well-rounded and totally constructed middle America lifestyle that we had. I was a Boy Scout in the Boy Scout troop at our old church. And so built on that platform, which at the time I was probably too crazy to understand it, but then matriculating off to university where now your parents can't tell you what time they wake up, you know, or to go to class,
yeah.
You're on your own. So the best thing for me was getting back to home. When I transferred back in, my parents got to come see me every game. You know, I had family and friends that were totally supportive, and I was back in that cocoon. But even I look back on it now, it was even a cocoon within a cocoon, because I was here on campus. I was required to take, you know, required biblical curriculum, which just really kind of brought me back to that upbringing that I had as a kid, you know. And so we, just like I'm assuming they've done for years, complained because we had to go to weekly assembly. But, you know, they brought in such fantastic speakers that shared, you know, their experiences and their knowledge. You know, I had wonderful professors that, again, they had a world view of knowledge, but then it was within a spiritual foundation. I was thinking just the other day, it came across me, you know, one of the pillars of the 10 pillars is the matching of Athens and Jerusalem.
Yes.
So when you look at it from a Christian foundation, you know, a lot of the interpretation of the Bible was in Greek, because they were basically the big kids on the block,
yeah,
coming in at the time. And so, and of course you had the old conservative Jewish, you know, thought, even of course from the Pharisee and Sadducee perspective, but also just from the Christian perspective of the Christian Jews. But you had this Gnostic or knowledge environment from the Greeks. And I mean, you know, again, every civilization makes it its wonderful contribution. And so I don't downplay the impact and the import of the Greek civilization from a knowledge perspective. But real knowledge and true knowledge, as we understand and as we grow in our faith, is biblical and based in Christian foundation. So the marrying of those two, to be able to articulate and to expound and to infuse, I call it burnishing young minds, in a Christian worldview, but still maintaining that, you know, things that we're going to have to, we should know. I mean, I've never seen in the Bible where it says you need to make yourself dumb and only believe, mm-hmm, in this worldview. As a matter of fact, you know, the adage is knowledge is power. And, you know, without knowledge, the people perish. Well, the correct knowledge, the correct type of knowledge, you know, the communication of what's really important in life. And again, probably at age 20, I wouldn't have been able to sit here and espouse on that. But of course, a lifetime lived, mostly well lived, gives me the knowledge and understanding to know it. If it had not been for some of the germination of those seeds planted here at Houston Baptist University, different paths probably would have been taken.
Oh, wow.
Arduous paths, same paths, but just a little bit more arduously.
I mean, so well said, Roy. I mean, you graduated in 83, mm-hmm, and member of the HBU, what position did you play?
I played the swing at the time. Of course, I was 6'3", and one of the tallest guys on my team. Right now, I have a son who's 6'7", and
wow,
he played, and he was a lot better than me, believe me. He was tremendous. But at the time, even in high school, I was one of the tallest players at 6'3", and now you got point guards that can't make the team if they're 6'5", or 6'6", or 6'7", so it kind of shows you how things have changed.
What's your NBA team?
My wife would tell you, I basically have no loyalty, okay, to anybody, you know, whether it's football, baseball, basketball. I do like teams that are successful, but then I also like teams that kind of figure it out too and put themselves together. I guess if I had a legacy team, it would have been the Lakers, you know, in the 80s, yeah. The old Lakers and Boston Celtics, you know, rivalries. I did enjoy, I just appreciate, I guess, talent. And so I loved the old Boston teams of the 70s and 80s. I loved the Lakers teams of the 80s and 90s. Of course, the Chicago Bulls. I guess if I can do a shout out, it was to the 94-95 Rockets that finally brought a championship to, I guess, to forlorn and suffering, long-suffering Houston fans. We're still, well, of course, then I have to include the Astros in that. We finally did that, and now we're still prayerful that the Texans will someday. So I guess I just appreciate teams that are able to perform well and to really at a high standard and then to stay there for any length of time.
I totally agree. Roy Jones has been with us today, graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Finance and Financial Management Services from HBU in 1983. And look at what God has done in his life and through his life. We are just so proud of you, Roy, and so grateful you're a part of our alumni family. And the light you are for Christ means a great deal to us. And as you and I both know, I do not know how you can lead a family if you're not walking with the Lord. I don't know how you can lead a marriage if you're not walking with the Lord.
True, but I promised my wife I wouldn't tell any how I got into these battle scars. I have a tremendous Christian wife. My kids have all, you know, committed themselves to the Lord, and it's been foundational, and it's all of a sudden it kind of happens without you even knowing. And I think that's the best kind of testimony that I can give. It's just nothing in me but Christ in me that does it, because it left my own designs, I don't know where I would be. But I thank you and bless you and you guys for having me here. It's been tremendous. It's always good to come home. Never let it be said there's no place like home.
Well, I agree with that. And there is a place for you at HBU. You can learn more about HBU, hbu.edu/admissions. We have someone standing by that'll talk to you, answer questions, help you in the whole admissions process, dispel the myth that only people affluent can go to a private school called HBU. No, 90% of our students receive financial aid. hbu.edu/admissions, 281-649-3211. Remember our graduate school, hbu.edu grad. And 42 states have students in them now that go to HBU online, hbuonline.com, 855-428-1960. And we're so grateful for those that continue to give to make the vision of HBU happen. I often think about the founding fathers who signed personal mortgage guarantees when this whole dream began, 1960. One of them still alive, Stuart Morris. They literally put it all on the line. God has obviously honored their faith and through their example incentivize us to give. You can do that online, our secure portal, hbu.edu/giving, 281-649-3222. Roy, it's awesome to meet you, man.
You as well.
And man, keep on keeping on, and thank you for just everything you shared today. It had a lot of meaning, and it encourages us as we continue to hopefully put our shoulder to the plow to move HBU forward.
Well, you use the farm-like statement, so I'll say it here, iron generally sharpens iron.
That's so
right. I appreciate you guys having me. Thanks, everybody's been so wonderful and welcoming, as I would expect here at home.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Great meeting you.
Here at HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.